Would I like it? Okay, it's offered twice.
Kavir Namasu Yavadarta Syada Pramato Vyavasaya Bhutihi Sidhe Nyatarte Nayate Tatra Parishramam Tatra Samikshamanaha. Well, did you chant the word for word meanings? Yes, let's. Ataha. For this reason.
For this reason.
Kavihi.
The enlightened person.
Namasu.
Namasu.
In names only.
In names only.
Yavat.
Yavat.
Minimum.
Minimum.
Artaha.
Artaha.
Necessity.
Necessity.
Syat.
Syat.
Must be.
Must be.
Apramattaha.
Apramattaha.
Without being mad after them.
Vyavasaya
Bhutti,
intelligently fixed.
Siddhe,
for success.
Anyata,
otherwise.
Arte,
in the interest of.
Na,
should never.
Yateta,
endeavor for.
Tatra,
there.
Parishramam,
laboring hard.
Tatra,
there.
Parishramam,
laboring hard.
Tatra,
there.
Samikshamanaha, one who sees practically. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life, while in the world of names, he should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things. Being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing.
Om Gyanatimiram Tasya Gyananjana Shodakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Asmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Sapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shabhavatitam Vande Ham Sri Guru, Sri Jata Padakamalam, Sri Guru Vaishnavanscha, Sri Rupam Chakrasatam, Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Sam Siddhitam, Chadvaitam Chavadrutam, Krishna Sehitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Navita Sri Vishakam Vitamstha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Manto Jayatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Gaha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vamsha Kolpata Rupyascha Kripa Sindho Yavacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasani Bhaktavrinda.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So let's see what the report says. The Bhagavad Dharma, or the cult of Srimad Bhagavatam, is perfectly distinct from the way of fruitive activities, which are considered by the devotees to be merely a waste of time. This word fruitive is a bit of an unusual word in our language. We don't find it bandied about. What you've been doing, not been engaged in fruitive activities. It's not a common word. The meaning, it comes from a Latin root which means to enjoy. So fruitive activities are activities meant for enjoyment. And in the previous verse, it's been mentioned that the Vedic literature also offers a program for enjoyment, especially enjoyment in the heavenly planets. According to the Vedic picture, just as on this earth there are places that are rough and miserable, and there are places that are very pleasant. So there are also higher places still, other planets, where life is still more heavenly, where the standard of enjoyment is far beyond anything available here, where the lifespan is thousands and thousands of years, where the effects of old age were practically not even felt, where every kind of enjoyment is available, and there are many followers of Vedic rituals who aspire to go there, and there's a program of sacrifices and austerities and pious acts by which one is supposed to become eligible to go. Even in our Western way of thinking, people hope to go to heaven. And perhaps their idea of heaven is a place where it's really nice. I sometimes get tracts showing a nice little cottage in the sun with picket fence and just the suburbia, but brought to another dimension. So the idea is there that let me enjoy in this life, or still better, hope to enjoy in the next life, or better still, enjoy in both. Let me enjoy now and let me enjoy later, or choose one or the other, but let me enjoy. And the advice has been given that what kind of enjoyment is that? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, adyantavantakotaya nateshu ramatevita. And that kind of enjoyment has a beginning, and therefore it has an end. And therefore, an intelligent person, Buddha, doesn't go there for happiness. Nateshu ramatevita. He doesn't look to things that have a beginning and an end. He just considers it worthless. Yesterday we were on the subway and we took one train that we were taking was in the direction of Coney Island. So Coney Island means you go there and you enjoy it, and then you take the train back.
And what was it? We went to Coney Island and we did this and we did that. And it's of no lasting values. There's no lasting value there. And therefore Krishna says an intelligent person doesn't take pleasure in that. Whether it's Coney Island in New York or Coney Island on heavenly planets, there was a book of poetry published in the 1960s, Coney Island of the Mind. So he's not, an intelligent person doesn't look there for enjoyment. He's looking for something higher. The whole universe, or for that matter, all material existence, is moving on as jagat, simply for planning business to make one's position very comfortable or secure. Although everyone sees that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. So jagat simply means the world, and the word implies that it's moving. The world is moving on. And as we move in this world, we're typically interested in these two things, comfort and security, and working hard for comfort and security, although we don't have comfort and security. The world is always going to be uncomfortable. This room is a bit uncomfortable because it's a little hot. And our pleasure is that the air conditioner makes it less hot. So the enjoyment is when the suffering is diminished. That's called comfort. And so it is with even someone's in the hospital, and they can I adjust your bed and make you more comfortable? You know, what comfortable? I'm suffering like a dog. But because I've got a bed that can be adjusted a few degrees this way or that way, I'm going to be comfortable. So there's comfort is illusory. Even if a person has a mansion and the most comfortable furniture and can click on this and click on that and ring a bell and everything will be brought, his mind will be comfortable. And the mind can make a heaven of hell or a hell of heaven. And therefore we're uncomfortable even when we're physically somewhat comfortable. So comfortable and secure. No security. I spent a lot of time in South Africa where there's really not security. The security situation has deteriorated considerably there, and there's a lot of lawlessness that goes on. People's cars are broken into with people inside, of course, and homes are broken into, and those are that's sort of like petty crime. It goes on from there. And so everyone's conscious that we have to be, everyone's got armed guards and all of that sort of stuff, security forces, dogs. So we think, I'm never going to live there because of the security situation. I'll live in New York, or better yet, I'll live in Vermont or Montana, and I'll be secure. But there's no security. Viruses go everywhere. Death goes everywhere. And what security do we have? Financial ruin can travel anywhere in the country, knows no state borders. There can be financial ruin, there can be emotional ruin, there can be physical ruin. Sorry, but these things are bad news of the day. Even in a safe position, one
steps the wrong way on the ground and ruins his ankle, or steps the wrong way across the street and loses his life.
I had a classmate, quite a bright and good-looking young girl who lived a few blocks from me.
And a few years ago, I was traveling with one of my mother's friends, who is still living in the town where I grew up. And she said, who was in your class? Who did you have in your class? And I started naming a teacher or two. She said, no, who were your classmates? And I said, well, this one. And she said, well, he's doing this and this and this. And that one, he's doing this and this. And I mentioned this girl. She said, you didn't hear? I said, no. You must have heard. No, we went back and forth through the iterations. The girl had finished high school, and she was in her maybe first or second year of college. And her sister and mother and father were driving her back up to school. That must have been a good school somewhere. And along the way, they had a flat tire. So the father got out to fix the flat tire, and the two girls got out and helped. And while they were fixing the flat tire, a drunk driver came along and finished all three of them just like that. Just like that. And the mother's sitting in the car. You know, I thought this girl was married, she has three kids, you know, whatever. Such is security in our world. And it's, of course, it's a great tragedy and so on. The driver wasn't insured, just to make it better. But death is the problem. Death at a young age, death at an old age, no one wants it, and it can come just like that. Come to me, come to my family. The driver was a lightning bolt, a tsunami, a crazy guy on the street, anything.
So, what Prabhupada says here is factual, that we're busy planning to make our positions comfortable and secure, even though we see that this existence is neither comfortable nor secure, and can never become comfortable or secure at any stage of development. Those who are captivated by the illusory advancement of material civilization, following the way of phantasmagoria, are certainly madmen. The word in Sanskrit is pramatta. Pramatta means mad. And pramatta means exceedingly mad. Exceedingly mad. Srila Prabhupada's looking at the advancement of civilization, and he's saying it's mad. We're improving our life, we're having a better life, we're having a... And Prabhupada's looking at it and saying, what's better? There was a chemical company, I forget which one, but back in the 1950s, 60s, their motto was better living through chemistry. Who was it?
Monsanto.
I don't think it was Monsanto. They weren't such a big name back then. May have been DuPont. One of those, as we'll read, our name. Better living through chemistry. And this is going to be better and better and better and better. Of course, in the 1960s, the LSD people came along and they adopted the slogan. But neither way actually meant better living. Now we have better living through digital technology. But it gives with one hand and takes with the other. You can find out anything you want to know in a few keystrokes, and you can waste 2.5 hours just like that. Right? We all have that experience. So it's making our life easier at the same time that it's making our life disappear. It's like a hole in which 2.5 hours just got deposited and dropped out of sight, and I don't know where they went.
Maharaj, they say we live longer than in the 19th century. That's my
view. We live longer, but every day, so many hours are going down the hole. So, this advancement is labeled here as phantasmagoria. Our life doesn't actually become happier. Our life doesn't actually become better. It's not that we become more wise because we have more gigabytes. But we imagine that we're becoming more advanced because we have more of this, more of that, more of this. I cited the statistic or the general drift of it the other day, that I have a student who was working for Merck, the big pharmaceutical company, and I asked him, what are they working on? He was in chemical engineering. What are they working on? Antidepressants. That was their main focus, because that's where their marketing people told them were the greatest opportunities, where the most advanced civilization in history. And the number of people, I'm really sorry I've forgotten the statistic, but the number of people who were clinically depressed was an impressive 2-digit number, the percentage of the population. And that was just clinically depressed, not ordinary run-of-the-mill depressed. So we have these problems. We have the problems of old age and death. We have the problems of disease. We have the problems that we're going through repeated cycles, lifetime after lifetime, and we don't know where we're going to end up from one life to the next. And within all of that, there are so many, I don't want to spend your morning filling you in on or reminding you of so many problems, but there's lots. And the madmen think, it's getting better, it's getting better, it's getting better. We've got this, we've got that. And Prabhupada said, they're mad now. They're not addressing the essential problems of life. They've been allotted a certain amount of time, and no one knows how much. And in that time, one can advance in spiritual understanding. In that time, one can understand what our position is in this world. In that time, we can understand who we are. We can understand what we're meant for. But we're too busy making this a better world. That means men. The whole material creation is a jugglery of names only. In fact, it is nothing but a bewildering creation of matter, like earth, water, and fire. Buildings, furniture, cars, bungalows, mills, factories, industries, peace, war, or even the highest perfection of material science, namely atomic energy and electronics, are all simply bewildering names of material elements with their concomitant reactions of the three modes. Since the devotee of the Lord
knows them perfectly well. He's not interested in creating unwanted things for a situation which is not at all reality, but simply names of no more significance than the babble of sea waves. The great kings, leaders, and soldiers fight with one another in order to perpetuate their names in history. They are forgotten in due course of time, and they make a place for another era in history. But the devotee realizes how much history and historical persons are useless products of flickering time. The great names in history are only that, they're names. I was reading a text mentioning great scientists. The text was written in the 1800s, and I recognized, you know, two or three of the names out of five or seven. And give it a little more time, and no one will remember those two or three names. We remember the name of Julius Caesar. Who else was important in the government at that time in Rome? We remember maybe Theodore Roosevelt, maybe who was his vice president. And in a short while, who was Theodore Roosevelt? Calvin Coolidge, what did he do? All of these names, big names, will be gone. They'll be gone. And what to speak of our name? You know, a nice place, if those of you who like to chant Hare Krishna, spend a little time meditating on beads and chanting. If you'd like to find a nice place to chant, graveyards are fantastic. There's still some of the best parks in the city. And you get to read the markers of the people who are parked there. This one, you know, beloved son of, and this one, beloved mother, and this one, tragically lost child, and this one, and this one, and this one. And even there's a nice little graveyard around the corner, which is an important graveyard. It's a preserved historical site because of the very important people who were buried there. And unless there's something outside to tell you why those people are important, you wouldn't even have a clue. And you think about it and look at the sign and says, yes, they were important because they started this or they signed that. So why? They're just names. All of those people now are just names. And the person, the body had a name, named at birth. And the person within the body, the consciousness, the Atma, the soul within the body, is now somewhere else. Got an entirely different name, entirely different place, maybe a different country, different species of life. Maybe somebody's got somebody's pet and he's got a name like Ruff or Tweety. But we send our students to school and to learn all of these important names and the dates, the very important dates that go with these important names. And then not just the people, but the important events with names like World War II, Korean conflict, it's not a war, it's Korean conflict, an important distinction. And industrial revolution and
if we start just listing off all of these important names, after a while, what does it sound like?
Just like what Prabhupada said, babble, 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 Gates for the Soros, blah, 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 dust bill, blah, 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 Nixon, blah, 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 blah.
Just disappears into the sound of sea waves. Just blah, 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 blah. And these were all very important events, crucial newspaper headlines day after day, important people occupying our attention and our conversation and our national discourse and all of that. And now we're just... Because that's the nature of the material world, that everything seems to change, but everything stays the same. Everything stays the same. People were being born thousands of years ago, now there's a new baby, it's the same thing. People are dying, people were dying then. People were starting businesses, people were going bankrupt, people were tremendously successful. People were in court fighting great legal battles, and the lawyers were moving in and out of the courts. If it pleased the court, yes, Your Honor, no, Your Honor. My client is outraged that. I object, Your Honor. What's changed? The fees are higher. But it's the same business. So, stepping back from all this, Srila Prabhupada looks at it philosophically and says, it's just the interactions of the elements of nature. There's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's air, there's mind, there's intelligence, and they all interact in different ways according to the qualities of material nature. And that's all there is. And it's combined this way, it's combined that way, and it becomes something special, it becomes something important, it becomes something meaningful to me. And it's washed away by the waves of time. So Prabhupada says, those who are fixed in perfect reality are not at all interested in such false things. For them, it is all a waste of time. Fixed in perfect reality means they're aware of their identity as spiritual living beings. And beyond that, they may be aware of their eternal relationship with Krishna, the ultimate living being. Since every second of human life is important, an enlightened man should be very careful to utilize time very cautiously. 1 second of human life wasted in the vain research of planning for happiness in the material world can never be replaced, even if one spends millions of coins of gold. The Srila Prabhupada's paraphrasing a Sanskrit proverb here, which says that essentially that even 1 moment of time can't be purchased back for any amount of gold. We're very careful. There's so many publications, Penny Saver and Dollar Saver and Price Grabber and Price Watch and so many things, because we don't want to lose money. Money is very important. We want to save money. But time is money. That's a common expression. And comparatively, the time is more valuable than money. I mean, even practically speaking, if a lawyer is being paid $100, $200, $500 an hour, as some of them are, and he's spending half an hour looking for something on the internet, it cost him $250 in time. And so
those who are important in this world, they value their time. They say, someone else can do this, or I'm not going to waste my time with it, because time is money. But so much of our time is wasted in making ourselves more comfortable, making ourselves more secure, making this a better world, making a name for ourselves. And how much money is that in time? If even 1 second can't be purchased back for any amount of gold, how much is our time worth? Therefore, the transcendentalist desiring freedom from the clutches of Maya or the illusory activities of life is warned herewith not to be captivated by the external features of fruitive actors, enjoyers. Human life is never meant for sense gratification, but for self-realization. Srimad Bhagavatam instructs us solely on this subject from the very beginning to the end. Human life is simply meant for self-realization. Completely different picture. One picture is life is meant for becoming more comfortable, more secure, advancing in civilization, development of machines and political strategy and so many things. And the other is that human life is meant for spiritual realization. Two different pictures of the world. The civilization which aims at this utmost perfection never indulges in creating unwanted things. And such a perfect civilization prepares men only to accept the bare necessities of life or to follow the principle of the best use of a bad bargain. The Prabhupada explains that our material bodies and our lives in that connection are bad bargains, because the living entity is actually spirit, and spiritual advancement of the living entity is absolutely necessary. Human life is intended for the realization of this important factor, and one should act accordingly, accepting only the bare necessities of life, and depending more on God's gift, without diversion of human energy for any other purpose, such as being mad for material enjoyment. Necessities are necessities. If we think about what's needed, we need a place to stay. We need food. We need some basic things. It's not really so much. If we did an inventory and said, what could I actually live without? The list would be pretty long. Not what could I live without in New York City. What isn't necessary for a human being? The list would be, do I need X? Do I need Y? Do I need Z? If we started taking New York City as a whole and saying, which of these businesses, which of these places, which of these enterprises are unnecessary for human life, we'd be back to Manhattan Island as the Indians knew it, which was actually a much nicer place. Fresh, drinkable Hudson River water. You can't, it's unavailable. It's a memory. Forests, deer, so many birds other than pigeons.
I mean, New York, Manhattan Island was a place that now you would pay a lot of money to see. The best national park in the whole country. Very rare place. And that was the standard. That was the standard. We've advanced so much that we've made a civilization where you can't drink the water. And if you do, you don't know, should I say, which toilet it was recycled from. The air is of a similar high quality. I mean, talk about necessities. Water is a necessity. You have to buy it from a bottle. Air is a necessity. In Bombay, I don't know where else, but I know that in Bombay they have these little kiosks where you can go and get a shot of air. Really. And I suppose that will become as common as bottled water. Water is needed, air is needed. The basic necessities of life. Food is needed. Now, what goes in the name of food is who knows what. Only Monsanto can tell you. Better living through chemistry. So the Vedic civilization, or the civilization of spiritual advancement, says, can we simplify? Can we live a more natural, simpler way of life? Do we need, you know, when I grew up, there was channel 2, channel 4, channel 5, channel 7, channel 9, channel 11, and maybe there was channel 12. 13th. Right, thank you. That was it. And really, it was only, I think, 2, 4, and 7 that were the networks and were broadcasting from 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. And the rest of them were like sometimes and, you know, not so strong. And now I don't know how it all works, but there's thousands and thousands. And are people happier? You poor thing, you grew up in the 1950s when there was only, when there were only 2 television channels. Is your life better? Is your kid's life better because he has access to, you know, 400,000 to 300,000 television stations or streams or whatever? Is it better? The Vedic civilization says, go back to what you really need in your life. And look at what you most need in your life. And the Vedic sages say, that's spiritual realization. My greatest need is not a promotion of, you know, running through it. It's spiritual realization. To understand who I am, to understand what I'm not. I'm not this body. I'm not American or Indian or British or Latin American or white or black or tall or short or thin or fat. I'm not this body that lasts only for a few years, has so many problems afflicting it. I'm a spiritual living being. I'm eternal. I'm by nature happy, unalloyed. Happiness is not something I have to pump into myself. It's already there. It just needs to be uncovered. And knowledge is also part of my nature. To have spiritual knowledge is natural for the living being.
And that should be our pursuit. To get spiritual understanding, to come to the spiritual platform, to get happiness from within, pay for it, run after it, or labor hard for it. Human beings are not meant to be like donkeys, working hard, working hard, working hard for very little, for a scrap of vegetable. Human life is meant for spiritual realization. Materialistic advancement of civilization is called the civilization of the demons, which ultimately ends in wars and scarcity.
It's a demonic civilization.
It really is a civilization in which wars are started on profit calculation. Actuaries working on
working it out. How much do we stand to gain? How much do we stand to lose?
And you have resource wars. Again, I spend a lot of time in Africa, which is a wonderful place and a terrible place because of its resources. When a country discovers, say, oil, and its future is very bright and its future is doomed, because now every government in the world that has power is going to be interested in that property, and they'll do anything necessary to secure their national interests by getting a piece of it. And the people who live there are basically in the way. And so you get these enormous tribal wars fought ostensibly by civilized people fighting over nothing, but in fact fought between the major powers of the world using the local people as shields and proxies. Is that demonic or not? So Prabhupada speaks of this advanced civilization as a civilization which is demonic and which ultimately ends in wars, yes, and scarcity. Even now, oil is going to be scarce. And not to speak of food. And water is the next on the list. We have situations in some countries where corporations are busy buying up the water interests. Or controlling the water means controlling the economy. And then water becomes scarce. The transcendentalist is specifically warned herein to be fixed in mind so that even if there's difficulty in plain living and high thinking, he will not budge even an inch from this stark determination. For a transcendentalist, it's a suicidal policy to be intimately in touch with the sense gratifiers of the world. But such a policy will frustrate the ultimate gain of life. When I was a kid, I don't know what the term is these days, but when there was a kid that we wanted to avoid, we'd say, he's got the cooties. Still speak about kids having the cooties? No. Okay. So, yeah.
Their grandparents.
Their grandparents still talk about the. Oh yeah, the grandparents have the cooties, right? We caught it when we were kids from the other kids on the playground. Anyway, the idea was that if someone has some qualities
you'll pick them up by their company. You know, if they've got the cooties, you'll get the cooties. If they've got a cold, you'll get a cold. If they've got tuberculosis, you'll get tuberculosis. On the other hand, if they've got good qualities, you pick up from them. Therefore, our parents are careful about what kind of kids we hang out with, because we pick up the qualities of those around us. So here, one is advised that to associate with those whose goal in life is to satisfy their senses, to get pleasure for the body and everything connected with temporary enjoyment. That's their goal. They don't have a higher goal. Kamo bhoga parama evtavaditi nishtutam. Bhagavad Gita says that such persons, when you ask them, what's your goal in life? To enjoy. To be the most I can be. Most what? Most happy, have the most stuff. To associate with those kind of people, if one is serious about spiritual life, is a suicidal policy. Shukadeva Goswami met Maharaj Parikshit when the latter felt a necessity for such a meeting. Shukadeva Goswami was the speaker of this Srimad Bhagavatam, and King Parikshit was the former king to whom it was spoken. He got the news that his life was going to end within a week. And so he just left his kingdom, went to the bank of the Ganges, surrounded himself with sages, or became surrounded with sages, and placed questions about the meaning of life before Sukadeva Goswami. It's the duty of a transcendentalist to help persons who desire real salvation and to support the cause of salvation. One might note that Sukadeva Goswami never met Maharaj Parikshit while he was ruling as a great king. For a transcendentalist, the mode of activities is explained in the next shloka, the next verse. So the advice given is that if we're serious about the purpose of life, then we should associate with those who are also serious about the higher purpose in life. Not with persons who are mad, who are illusioned by the material energy, not with the madman. Aparamanta means those who are freed from this madness and who've realized that my time is limited and that time should be dedicated for spiritual realization. So our Krishna consciousness movement is based on that principle. How to save our time so that this life can be used for the highest purpose. Maybe I'll stop here and see what kind of questions I have. Yes?
So Maharaj, you mentioned about how our time is very precious. How do we not get swept away by all the day-to-day activities?
How do we not get swept away by all these day-to-day activities? It requires practice. It requires practice. It requires a technique. It requires having something better, first of all. I'll get swept away by everything else if I have nothing else to do. Want to go to Coney Island? Yeah, I got nothing else to do. But if I have something else to do, something more important, nah, no time. So the person who's on the path of self-realization has that sense that I'm working on something higher. And he associates with others who are serious about that. And he's busy in activities that are meant for that. And that carries over even to ordinary
as you say, day-to-day activities, which sounds like it means his job and other such things. So that all becomes permeated by his sense of spiritual powerless. Mm-hmm. Especially in practical terms, this chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He keeps that vibration going. He's chanting every day, he's hearing the mantra, and it's there even while he's busy in other things. It's just naturally in his consciousness. Naturally thinks of Krishna. Because he's practiced thinking of Krishna. And from practice it becomes, more than that, it becomes spontaneous. He loves to think of Krishna. There's so many things in his mind. Looks like a businessman. Businessman, he's always thinking of money. You know, he's on a holiday with his kids and his wife, but he's thinking about money. Because he has money consciousness. So wherever, even he meets a person, looks at him, checks out, you know, how much his shoes probably cost, how much his suit is worth, or he's thinking about who this guy works for and, you know, what kind of money might be involved. That's money consciousness. A lusty person. So I was thinking about sex. Yeah, he's working, but he's dreaming. A political activist. He's always thinking about the cause. So a person who's Krishna conscious is always thinking about Krishna. As one can be absorbed in various kinds of unreality, in various things that come and go, and have only temporary meaning, which means no substantial meaning. One can also become absorbed in thought of the absolute reality of Krishna. And especially because Ittam Bhuta Gunahari, Krishna has so many attractive qualities. That's a whole different talk. But when we read Vedic literature, we find out that Krishna is not just an abstract, impersonal, diffuse reality, but that Krishna has qualities and activities and wonderful features that please the mind of the self-realized person, please the heart of the self-realized person, enliven the self-realized person. Something else. Yeah, all the way in the back.
What was the verse today, Maharaj?
Verse today was I'll give you the English, I think. For this reason, the enlightened person should endeavor only for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. He should be intelligently fixed and never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. Yes.
I had a question.
You had a question.
Thank you for that class. It's wonderful. But I was wondering, so if I have like an innate curiosity about, say, like history, you know, like if I find some things fascinating or like culture, can I
find history fascinating, culture fascinating?
Yeah, you know, or like say, you know, if I've read the New York Times regularly, I mean, should I understand all this to be illusion? And I should renounce.
Should you understand all this to be illusion? That's a good understanding.
But how to practically like come to that realization without falsely renouncing things of this world?
Without falsely renouncing the New York Times? maybe by genuinely renouncing the mood. I had an experience. I was in San Diego. We had our offices there, Back to Godhead. And this were the days when the Los Angeles Times was really the only newspaper out there on the West Coast, and it was pitiful. I mean, anyone who grew up in the New York Times, in New York City, just couldn't bear to read the Los Angeles Times, which has since become a better newspaper, but back then it was really the pits. And by extraordinarily exceptional good fortune, the New York Times had an offer by which you could get like 3 weeks of the New York Times free in San Diego. So someone in our office signed up, sure, you know. And thereafter, for however many weeks, every day the New York Times came to our office. And every day, everyone in our office spent between 45 minutes and 2 hours reading the New York Times. It's how it works. It's so interesting. I mean, it's a very well done newspaper. You've got highly paid writers and all of that effort that goes into every edition of the New York Times and all of these fascinating stories of things happening all over the world and happening right around the corner from you, and opinions and breaking stories and this and that. And you know, just to glance over it takes you 45 minutes because you're going to read one story for sure, and if you read one after that, you're in that mode and you're going to read the next one. Guaranteed. It's like half an hour to on a busy day, you know, well, at least half an hour for the New York Times, and on a not busy day, half the morning. And what profit at the end of 3 weeks of reading the New York Times every day? And when I, as the leader of the organization, finally canceled our subscription to the New York Times, life was so much better. We were so much more productive. And our minds were not filled with things that ultimately didn't matter at all. Build a delay in. Take your subscription to the New York Times and have some sort of digital thing so that it gets delivered to you 2 months later. How important is it? What does it matter? Build a better thing. It gets delivered to you 1 year later. What does it matter? But it seems very important. And it's not. So make an experiment. Can I cancel my subscription to New York? Can I transfer my interest? History interests me. Read Srimad Bhagavatam. You have a history where every aspect of the history is enlightening. Can you say that about the New York Times? After you've spent your 45 minutes to 2 hours reading the day's newspaper or the website, do you feel better? Have you become more enlightened? Have you spiritually advanced? Have you made real progress in solving the ultimate needs of your human life? So take it and transfer it. Want to read history? Read about Krishna's history. You want to read about science? There's so much. There's fifth canto, so a cosmologist's playground. Want to read about politics? It's there. Want to read about love? It's there. Name something that's interesting. Want to read about science and chemistry and time? When we transfer our attention to connect it with Krishna, it all becomes of value.
What is time, Maharaj?
What is time? Now there we are going to be into a We have to schedule a seminar on that. And the reason is because we don't have enough time. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am time. Time is a feature of Krishna, because time is all powerful. Yes? If Krishna says I'm time, he doesn't say I'm the New York Times. Certain familiarity with
degree.
What's going on to some degree. You know, I have a strategy for current events, because we don't want to seem like we're stupid, we're just Hare Krishnas, we don't know what's going on in the world. So if I meet someone and his question is, well, what do you think about X? Then I'll ask him, well, what's actually happening with X? And he'll tell me in about 20 words or so. And now I know as much as I needed to know about X. Now, yes, things like railway schedules, schools being closed, storms that are going to overrun Long Island and so on. Yeah, okay, there are some things that are practical that do need to be known, and we're not so, what's the word? Sparkly determined, that's probably put it, that we're going to shut out information that matters. But when you get down to what really does matter, it's a small, small portion of what's out there. So the devotee becomes expert in finding ways to get what he needs to know, what he needs to have, and saving his time by letting the rest of it go by. Is that okay?
Just one more.
Okay. I don't want to see partially. Okay.
There's a verse in the Gita, Meha Bikrama Nashoshti, Pratyo Hayana Vidyate Swapana Yasha, Vatmasha, Hari Chai Te Ma Tokaya. In this endeavor, there is no loss of diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the greatest danger. I have a question about that. If a soul is engaged in service and does great things as far as propagating Krishna consciousness, and later on at some point he falls or she falls, what does that soul's work mean at that point?
What is that soul?
What does the transcendental work that soul has done? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Is it tampered? Does it mean less?
Mm-hmm. The question is: suppose someone takes up Krishna consciousness, and then at some point falls from the path. What happens to the work, the effort that he's put into it, the work that he's done, is that all lost? Yeah? No, it's not lost. This is dealt with in two places you can look.
One is at the end of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains that whatever spiritual progress he's made is his eternal credit. And so in the next life, if one is left off, he picks it up again and makes further advancement. From that point of view, every one of us can think that why are we here in this room and the rest of the world is wandering around doing something else? It means that you must have taken up the path of spiritual progress in your previous life, and therefore you have an interest, therefore you're pursuing that. It's not lost. Just Krishna says automatically, as it's almost helplessly, when it becomes attracted again. But that's one answer. And if you look in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Narada Muni is speaking, and there's a verse that begins, Chatvasvatanam charanam vijahavare. And again, the meaning is that his progress is permanent. Even if it's temporarily seems to be lost, it comes back again. And the example given is that a child who's left home is not the same as a child who's an orphan. A child who's an orphan has no parents, but the child who's left home has parents. He just has to come back. Is that okay?
Thank you. It's
a permanent credit. Permanent credit. And more and more and more and more till it becomes full.